You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey, Every Little Thing. This is Esther from North Carolina, and I am wondering, why is there a houseplant craze right now? Is this new? Why do we take these tropical plants and grow them in our temperate zone homes? That is my factual emergency.
Hello?
Hey, it's Flora from Every Little Thing.
Hi, Flora.
Okay, so houseplants.
Houseplants!
Is this a new hobby for you? Did it sprout up, I don't know, 8 months ago in March 2020?
No, it certainly blossomed in March. I have had houseplants of some variety for a number of years, but the problem is that I keep moving, and every time I move, I leave some behind because it's just a lot of work. But this time when I moved, I actually gained houseplants. So, you know, you can picture me in a hotel room with jars of water on my windowsill of little plant cuttings in the jars.
Why were you in a hotel?
So the hotel, I was taking a little weekend getaway staycation for myself in the middle of moving. So I put up an ad and I said, looking for Monstera cuttings. And the person who replied said, I have Monstera. I also have a lot of other plants. What do you want?
Aww.
So I went over there and this person just went around saying, oh, do you want some of this? Do you want some of this? And like, I'd say I got 15 cuttings when I left.
Wow.
And I had brought a bunch of mason jars from my house when I left for my staycation.
You were planning ahead for your growing family.
Yeah. Yeah. I was planting ahead. And once I was in the hotel room, I put each plant into its own mason jar. So it was kind of absurd.
I feel like you were like Octomom, you know, but like instead of going to a hospital, you went to a hotel and you came back with like a whole new family.
Yeah, and I can take care of them all by myself.
So what do you want to know?
I want to know, when did people start keeping plants in their house? Are there cave paintings of people tending to plants in the corners of their caves? And has this happened before? Have we loved houseplants this much before?
Like, we're living in a houseplant heyday now. Has that ever happened before?
Yeah.
I think we can help with that.
Houseplants do go in and out of fashion.
That's historian and author Catherine Horwood.
Hi, Esther.
Hi, Catherine.
And she dug up some answers to your questions.
I wrote a book called Potted History, How Houseplants Took Over Our Home.
But Catherine isn't just burying her nose in a book. She also likes getting her hands dirty.
I've always been a mad collector of houseplants. My absolute favorite is one called an Alocasia zebrina. They've got these big, they call them elephant ear leaves. And I've got a Kentia palm, and that's about the same size as me. It's about 5'5". Actually, it's a bit bigger than me, but I like big statement plants.
Yeah, I mean, I like plants with big leaves, and I like plants that vine and climb everywhere and kind of take over a room. So me and Catherine are definitely on the same leaf length.
I think you definitely are on the same leaf length. Catherine says people have kept plants inside for thousands of years. China, Egypt, ancient Greece and Rome, Japan, all have long histories of keeping plants. And potted herbs have especially deep roots.
It's actually one of the earliest reasons that people started bringing plants into their homes to use in the kitchen, using them to make medicines, going back, millennia.
But when it comes to the ornamental plants lots of us have in our houses today, the palms, the spider plants, the ZZ plants you dig up at Home Depot, or the Trader Joe's orchids, the popularization and spread of those plants in the West traces back to a very specific moment in time.
The majority of houseplants, I would say 90% of the plants that we grow in our houses now, arrived in the 19th century in Europe. And there's a very clear reason why that happened.
Is it colonialism?
Yep, that's part of it. Colonialism is in full swing by the 19th century. European countries are invading other countries and finding all sorts of hideous ways to extract value. and plants were one of them. Plant hunters went out in search of cash crops like tobacco, teas, and rubber, but they also brought back plants where the value was less clear, decorative plants, plants that looked interesting. And they had plenty of plants to choose from as they gunboated around the globe. But there was an obstacle, getting the plants back to Europe alive.
They couldn't get them back because they died on the en route. Even if they brought back seeds, most of them would get eaten by the rats on the ship.
Oh, no.
Which brings us to a key invention that propelled the proliferation of houseplants in Europe. It came in 1829.
It's quite an amazing story. There was a man called Dr. Nathaniel Ward, and he was an amateur horticulturalist. And he'd been keeping a moth chrysalis in a jar. He was doing an experiment. And he'd sealed it because he wanted to see what happened. But he noticed that a little fern appeared to be growing inside this jar. And he wasn't watering it, he wasn't giving it any air, and he realized that plants could grow in a sealed container.
Ooh, terrariums.
Yep. Based on this experiment, Ward invented an early tabletop terrarium.
Maybe 14, 16 pieces of glass welded together as like a piece of stained glass. But he made it into a case. And obviously, you had to be able to open it to put the plants in. And then it would be sealed with wax. Some moisture was put in to start with. And then it would just, the plants would give off moisture themselves. That would run down the inside of the glass. And you would just have this circle of life.
It was a rat-blocking, self-watering plant suitcase.
That's so cool.
Ward creatively named it the Wardian case, and it meant more plants could travel and survive the trip. In fact, Ward went on a plant hunting expedition to Australia to prove it. And when he got back, word spread.
This was just transformational in the horticultural world and allowed all the plants that we now grow in our home to start flooding into Europe.
The Wardian case ushered in a golden age of houseplants by facilitating the transport of plants to Europe and helping them thrive once they arrived. Budding indoor gardeners got their own personal Wardian cases, and their plants flourished, protected from polluted city air. Books and magazines popped up about how to care for houseplants, and they became a fad.
Wow.
When we come back, we'll hear about one of the charismatic megaflowers that rode in on this green wave.
These plants are being basically plundered. It was like a pirate in that they were just taking what they wanted and there wasn't any thought about the consequence.
Have you ever had orchids?
I have an orchid. So I never really liked orchids. I never trusted them. I thought they were just fancy divas that just like needed a lot of care and were really hard. And then at the beginning of the pandemic, someone brought me some groceries. And along with my groceries from Trader Joe's, she brought me a little orchid.
And?
And it turns out it's not that hard.
You turned over a new leaf when it comes to your orchid views?
They're definitely growing on me.
I can't wait to ruin them for you. We're going to talk about the soiled history of how orchids bloomed in Europe.
Ooh.
Here to tell us more is Charlotte Salter Townsend. She works at the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin, and she studies the history of plants.
Hi, Esther. How are you?
Hey, Charlotte.
Orchids were houseplants long before Europeans heard the O word. Confucius kept orchids in China. In Japan, samurais kept orchids starting in the 1700s. In fact, they only found their way to England accidentally.
The story goes that back in the early 1800s, a collector called William Swainson sent some other plants back to Europe, and he packaged them in this material they found growing in the rainforest, basically bits of orchids that weren't in bloom.
Whoa.
So yeah, this collector Swainson just packed his boxes, put in loads of that material. It was abundant where he was in Brazil, sent them back to England. And it was only when they got back, they started to bloom. And somehow some of them survived. And then people became very, very interested in the orchids.
This was the beginning of a craze. It's been called orchid delirium. Compared to the native daisies and cow parsley growing in British backyards, these ornate tropical orchids were unlike anything anyone in Europe had ever seen before. Nurseries sold them, and as demand shot up, nurseries needed more supply.
So you have these huge nurseries that hired people to go out and find orchids. So for example, Thomas Lobb and his brother William became very important plant hunters. So at the age of 13, Thomas began working for Veitch Nurseries in England, and he was sent over eventually to work in East Asia mostly, and he focused on orchids.
You know the orchid you have from Trader Joe's?
Yeah.
It's very likely it's the genus Phalaenopsis. It's very common.
It did not have a label. It said orchid.
Okay, well, it's probably that one. And Thomas Lobb was the first person to bring a Phalaenopsis back to England. It could have been your orchid's great-great-great-great-grandflower. He grabbed it on an expedition to the Himalayas in 1845.
The Himalayas?
Yeah, but orchid hunters were collecting all over. They were going to Asia, the South Pacific, South America to grab orchids. And they snatched a lot.
These plants are being basically plundered. It was like a pirate in that they were just taking what they wanted and there wasn't any thought about the consequence.
One British nursery advertised around 80 different species of orchid in 1825, but that number shot up to 1,600 species over the next decade.
Oh my goodness. Did they breed those or were those all ones that they plundered?
Well, initially, nurseries in Europe had a very difficult time growing orchids.
They couldn't get orchids for a long time to grow from seed. They couldn't just grow new orchids. So every orchid that was arriving that was being sold for a long time in the 1800s was wild harvested. That's why it was so damaging as well.
Well, what was the ecological impact on the orchid's native ecology?
Charlotte says it was substantial. I mean, the orchid hunters took whatever they could find, the rarer the better. And there are reports of hunters taking specimens and then destroying the rest of that population in the wild to prevent competitors from snatching them. In fact, this period of orchid looting may have wiped out some species entirely.
There are areas that were described as being rich with orchids that are now bereft.
Wow.
This is the shady side of houseplant history.
The way that a lot of our common houseplants, our orchids, for example, came to us was through thievery, initially. They came from areas that were exploited by colonial powers. And they were part of a bigger pattern of taking the resources from that place and bringing it back to a certain part of the world.
Well, now I'm really depressed. I have this image of some colonial jerk with a bunch of rare plants that he puts in his study and all of his peers are like, oh, you have the coolest plants.
Yeah. I mean, people did flaunt their flowers.
They just became the symbol of exoticism and power. And I suppose the very fact they were hard to access made them all the more valuable. So there's records of orchids being sold at auction for upwards of £1,000.
That would be over $100,000 today.
Wow. What would I have done back then? You know, me, the little common pauper.
So you might not have been able to afford an orchid. But there were other pillaged plants on the table, many that you would recognize today.
Spider plants.
This is Catherine Horwood, our book author again.
The ferns, of course, the palms, the alocasia, which is now very, very popular, the zamikolkos as well, the ZZ plant.
These plants were easier to propagate back in Europe than orchids, so they were cheaper, meaning that more people could have them and have a lot of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. This was the time when people had probably as many houseplants in their homes as we do today, if not more, because being Victorians, they liked to go over the top. They were very OTT.
Just think about Victorian decor, like gold trim, rugs, patterned wallpaper.
Spindly legged chairs that you don't really want to sit on because they'll just collapse.
Velvet settees.
They did the same with plants. People wanted more, the more, the better. They really threw absolutely everything at it.
And one plant you were very likely to find, it was like the fiddle-leaf fig of the Victorian era, is a plant called Aspidistra, aka the cast iron plant.
Cast iron because It has a cast iron constitution. It's not the most interesting plant, but it became a cliche in Victorian times. Even into the 20th century, George Orwell, you know, wrote the book Keep the Aspidistra Flying, because just every home would have one, dusty, sitting in the corner, neglected, but refusing to die.
This is my favorite little detail about this plant. People even took selfies with it.
No way.
Yep. The well-known hashtag, Horty Hotty, dates back to the 1800s.
Horty Hotty. No. Did they use them as dating profiles?
Well, we're going to send you the pictures and then you let us know if you think they would work as a dating profile.
Okay, I'm excited.
And we'll put them on Instagram at ELT Show and on Spotify too.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So it's two different images. One is a woman in a dress standing outside a brick house, and there's a table next to her. It's got lace, like a lacy tablecloth. And then on top of that is a pot, a very nice pot with a plant inside of it. And she's just kind of standing and sort of doing that not smile.
She's very stern.
That they did back in the day. Yeah. And then the other picture appears to be a young man. He looks like he's a teenager. And he's got a table next to him with a nice little planter with a plant inside of it.
He's also wearing a three-piece suit.
He is. It's very posh.
I think he'd do great on a dating profile.
Yeah, I think both of these, you know. I would swipe right.
But that Horty Hotty heyday didn't last forever. By the early 1900s, houseplants were out of fashion.
And it was, again, very much tied up with interior design. The whole feel of homes were beginning to change, and there was a kickback against this whole OTT velvet, too much of everything. Modernism was just beginning, and you know, some of the designers and architects were even painting their walls white. Amazing. So the very ornate glass cases and jardinieres, that sort of thing, just looked completely wrong. And to be honest, after the First World War, I found it really hard to find any illustrations of plants in the home other than the odd cacti. I mean, they just completely went out of fashion.
That's really sad.
Well, they didn't die out completely. In the 1970s, houseplants had a growth spurt again. And of course, they're back.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a whole houseplant community today.
Yeah, there definitely is. Like, plants are just so easy to share. If anyone came and asked me for a cutting, of course. I want you to experience the absolute delight and joy and constant fear of killing them. Everyone should have that.
I love to think about plants as moving that way, that this is the new plant migration. It's not in Wardian cases after being stolen from other countries. It's neighbors giving plants to neighbors.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Every Little Thing is produced by Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Basulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just, scored by Emma Munger and Dara Hirsch, mixed by Dara Hirsch. ELT is a Spotify original podcast. I'm a Horty Hottie too. Goodbye.
Wait, I have this one joke that I want to tell you.
Oh, great, yeah.
What happens when a plant is sad?
What happens?
Other plants photosympathize with it.
Did you write that one yourself?
No, my dad helped me.
It had a touch of dad in it.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad was into puns before it was cool.
Yeah, and now when it still isn't cool.